Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode.
Today, we are here to talk about ABM mastery in enhancing your campaign strategy with trigger stacking. And it's going to be an excellent conversation today because we have Scrappy ABM with us. I'm giving you a little bit of a pre-introduction before we get there, but just waiting for a couple more people to come in. Do you have anything planned for the weekend, Mason?
I live in Indianapolis, so my in-laws, aunt and uncle, and all of their kids, and they have 9 kids, are coming up this weekend, and it's race weekend. So we're actually going to the Indy 500 on Sunday. It'll be my first time. I've lived in Indy for 3 years, so I'm super pumped about that. So it'll be a lot of grilling, a lot of racing, and just like hanging out. So yeah, I'm like actually very excited for this weekend.
Nice. A good social engagement because it's not all just about the left turns.
I will say, I don't know.
No,
it's all good. I mean, it's just, I'm not a race person, admittedly. I'm excited to go because it's like the world's largest sporting event of all time.
No, and there's a lot of endurance that those drivers and the teams have to come together. So it's not to make light of what they do at all. It takes a lot of effort to get those cars out there. What doesn't take a lot of effort, look at that transition, Mason, is ABM. It can be scrappy and it doesn't have to be this huge lift. So let's go ahead and jump in for today. I'm going to be your host, Sales Intel Director of Marketing over here, Ariana Shannon. And of course, we have with us Mason Cosby, founder of Scrappy ABM.
Ariana, super pumped to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. All right, let's get this thing rolling here. Because I loved when we were talking about this earlier, Mason, and we were talking about ABM and why does ABM fail? And you came back with this excellent statement here.
Yes. When we think often about why ABM fails, I think it's because people immediately think, oh, I've got to go build this massive tech stack and I've got to buy all this technology and build all these massive programs. But at the core, I think a lot of people are familiar with the idea of crawl, walk, run. But when we think about crawl, walk, run, I'm going to give a quick analogy. Fun fact, for those of you that don't have kids, I have a 9-month-old. You may actually hear her in the background. It takes a child anywhere from 7 to 10 months to learn to even crawl. So again, that beautiful little girl, she's 5 months old. She's not crawling yet. And then when we think about walking, it actually takes a kid anywhere from like 10 to 18 months to learn to walk. And then generally speaking, when we think about running, it's about 18 to 24 months. So again, from age zero to age 18 to 24 months is generally when a baby learns to run. But let's say hypothetically, I wanted my baby to run in, I don't know, 6 months. What would I do? I'd obviously go buy the best running equipment because it's equipment that makes us incredible runners. So I'd get the best headphones and the best shoes and the best shirts and make sure that they've got perfect timing, great headphones, that they're set up for success to run based on their equipment. And then obviously when we get the equipment and we marry that with an infant, we get, drumroll please, Usain Bolt. Obviously, it's the equipment that makes Usain Bolt one of the best runners in the world of all time and so successful when it comes to running. Obviously. No, when I put it that way, it's obvious that it's not reality. And then when we go to our next slide, what it turns into is people invest
park $200,000 in building out their ABM program. So again, $200,000
between the ABM platform, between the gifting platform, the gifting budget, the data enrichment platform, like they buy all the things with no plan and no strategy, thinking it's the equipment that will build an incredible program. So that's why often ABM fails. It's not the tooling that actually makes the program successful. It's the strategy. It's how do we use these tools? Great quick example on tooling. Someone explained to me Salesforce is like a block of wood, and Salesforce is only as good as its carpenter. So again, there's lots of people that hate Salesforce because it's super complex. But at the end of the day, as good as your carpenter is, as good as your developer is, as good as the person that's the admin over Salesforce will determine how good the tool is. So again, a lot of ABM tooling is similar. It's not the tools, it's the strategy. So again, that's why we're focused today on how to crawl, because nobody likes to crawl. Crawling sucks, but you have to crawl in order to learn how to walk and then run. With that, if we go to our next slide, we've got a quick framework. And this framework is going to help you understand, how do I actually get started with that crawl stage? So the idea behind the activation playbook is, what is a specific tangible action that happens that then indicates to our sales or our customer success team
to get involved? So I think through that, what is
action? So a target account hits our product page, our pricing page, and our schedule a call page. Very tangible action. It's not an MQL score. It's not any kind of complex scoring mechanism. It's a clear trigger. It's a clear signal that happens. Another would be significant product utilization. So somebody is consistently hitting up against their product usage limits. Maybe an opportunity to expand that account. But in order to do that, we have to reach out. We have to say something to these accounts. Those are examples of data points. The idea behind data is just, who are we going after? Why are we reaching out?
Just people appropriately. So again, in the context of data, again, who is it? Why are we reaching out? What's the signal? And then how to message people appropriately. Next would be distribution. So again, from a distribution perspective, there's tons and tons of channels that we can use to get in front of these accounts. The question is, what's the best channel to use to actually get in front of them? A lot of people love email, but email is often crowded. So if you have other better distribution channels, could be social, could be ads, could be a webinar, for example. These are just distribution channels to get information out. Next would be destination. So it's the content that we're putting in front of them that actually advances their understanding of why they might need our product, solution, services, whatever that next step is in their journey. And then lastly is direction. How are we tracking it? Is it a form? Is it a specific CTA? There's lots of free tools now available, and we'll talk about some of them later, that actually do de-anonymize your website traffic and can help you see, hey, this is a hit our website. And as a result, we know that this is a right fit. They're hitting, they're heading the right direction. So again, data, distribution, destination, and direction. So as you're thinking through different playbooks that you can stack on top of each other and different signals you can stack on top of each other, come back to this framework. We'll actually outline a couple of different examples. So if you want to go ahead and write down this 4D framework, you can start to think through this for yourself.
And that's where it comes through here, because I love also where you're starting here, Mason, of data, not only because that's what I spend a lot of my time thinking about and talking about, but it's more than just that. It's understanding, how do you use this information? What information do you have? And then to your point, how do you actually get it out there? Where is it supposed to go? And then how is that, again, velocity, and it's in the correct direction, making sure that you're using the information in the right area. And that's why we have today's conversation around trigger stacking. And that's what we're going to go through here too. And that's where it's trigger stacking intent specifically. Again, trigger stacking, as we've talked about this, is taking all of those data points and getting them to align with one another, because this is the fastest way to see your rapid improvement in your ABM strategy. And let me take a little moment to explain again, when we talked about, hey, why does some ABM fail? Why does some intent data strategy fail? You're trying to take one signal, one intent topic, one signal from one area and say, aha, we saw the signal. And now they want to buy. They want my salesperson to call them immediately. They want to pitch right now. No, that's not how this works. There has to be a series of decisions and the right timing. That's really what intent data is trying to solve. It's trying to help you solve who's the best fit from your data, but then what's the right time to reach out to the right person? And that's where trigger stacking comes from. It's layering your data like a cake, a parfait, an onion, whatever layer analogy you want to use, to understand what is actually happening at this account and when is the right time to address them. And again, what is intent here? Talked about it a little bit. I mentioned some elements there, but it's really about signals. It's understanding what is happening at an account that's going to help you understand what is happening next. That's where all this comes through. And then again, some of those examples of that intent data, you've got so many to choose from out there, but the top six that you're going to hear a lot and that we'll even talk a little bit about today is your news data. News data is things like they just got funding, they just hired a CMO, they just had a round of layoffs, they just had, you name it. It's all about understanding and a little bit of news jacking to understand what's happening at the account. You can also get some partner data, that insight into what your partners are seeing, the engagement that they're having, first party website intent data, understanding who's coming to your website, how they're engaging with your content. And this goes beyond just your average retargeting. It's really making it intelligent to reach the right people. Predictive intent, reaching out to that top of the funnel. So if we look at our funnel and you've got your buying signal, you've got your awareness, and then you've got your research. If we break it down, don't hate me, marketing people. I know there's so many more breakdowns of that. If we look at three, predictive intent really comes in at that research stage, which is where a lot of your buyers are right now, because especially as a focus on a self-directed buyer, they don't want to talk to salespeople anymore. They want to research what's going on there. And that's where predictive intent comes in. Buyer intent looks at that lower half of that funnel. They're ready to have more of a decision. They're starting to see the signals. So when you have both, again, trigger stacking, you can start to see how that comes through. And then of course, everyone's favorite, review sites. Your G2, your Capterra, your Gartner's of the world, it's all out there. Trust Radius, understanding who's looking at your site, what reviews are out there, and what are people comparing it to. Very high level, fast rundown of the intent data types, because again, we want to give you context, but I'm not here to tell you about the sources. We're here to talk about how you can identify activation plays that Mason just talked about through trigger stacking with these intent topics or intent signals.
Yeah, especially when you start to think through activation playbooks, there's three different buckets you can put these in. So one would be prospecting. So again, these are people that are not currently in an active sales conversation. So great examples here would be things like website re-engagement. So again, people have hit our product page, our pricing page, our schedule a call page, but they didn't book a call. Another would be industry news. So quick example, for those that may or may not be aware of the FTC's new ruling around non-compete agreements. So non-competes will be null and
void from today. Not today, but from the date of the ruling. And if, for example, you are in an industry that's been really regulated through non-compete agreements, if you're an outside recruiting firm, that industry news, though it not may not be an intent signal from a specific account, is a signal that there is a massive change in the market that impacts your buyers. And as a result, you can then use that information to share with your accounts and say, hey, didn't know if you were aware, this change has occurred in the market, in the industry. This is how it impacts you. Is there something that we could help you do with this new information? Again, prime example would be recruiters reaching out to highly competitive industries that they've worked in previously to say,
all those people that you were trying to work with previously are now back available on the market because of the change in legislation. Huge opportunity around industry news. People are often familiar with third-party intent data. I look at this as a directional signal to say these people are actively in market, but one of the greatest gripes and complaints about third-party intent data is that it helps you understand the account, but not the individual. So again, I love this as a directional signal to say we should focus on this account, but this is not a conversion-based playbook. This is largely going to be then focused on how do we make them aware that we're a viable opportunity? And if you can marry third-party intent with first-party engagement, then that's where you really start to see a massive impact. Because if you can de-anonymize on the contact level, your website traffic, after you've seen third-party intent, you marry those two things together, that they're actively in market, they're not just checking out your website one time, and you generally can actually identify who you should be reaching out to. Huge opportunity from a trigger stacking perspective on that front. Lots more that I could dig into on the prospect side. But again, I think you get the idea of how do you take the data and the signals that you have and build repeatable playbooks using the data that you have, creating and identifying great distribution channels to get in front of these people, then creating great content that speaks directly to who it is and why you're reaching out, and then working through how to track that they've actually engaged with that content. Next would be the opportunities bucket. So again, if you're thinking about where should I start, closed loss is one of the best places. And we'll talk about that here in just a moment. But closed loss is a huge opportunity for the opportunity bucket because you have so much data on these people. They've already gone through a sales cycle and nobody is loyal to them in the sense that nobody really wants to experiment on their customer base because you're putting revenue at risk. Whereas when you experiment and close lost, you have the almost near customer level data from an understanding because they've gone through your sales cycle, the decision committee, you know what their budget was, what they were interested in buying. You also should know why they didn't buy from you. The objections to overcome the next time you re-engage. Sorry, I get really passionate about that one, but like huge opportunity there if you actually want to think through how do I functionally build this process. Next, we stalled pipeline. So again, people that get stalled out because of a specific stage? How do you start to proactively think through, how do I overcome the objection that happens at that part of the funnel? God, there's a lot more that we could dig into on opportunities. The last one that I want to dig into, though, would be customers. And again, a lot of people have been experiencing lots of churn the past few years for a variety of reasons, which means you have a bucket of people that have worked with you previously that saw value in you and likely, again, from a closed loss perspective, told you why they left you. So many tech companies have been making massive updates to their products, and the reasons that a previous company left you may be reasons you can overcome now with new product features. So you can re-engage those by cohorting those that left for lacking features or lacking benefits that you now have. Huge opportunity there. Also could be customer referral programs, looking at your customer base. This is really tactical for a moment, but I worked at a company in which we would actually look at our champion customers and map their LinkedIn networks up against our target account list and identifying who has an in that already loves us and works with us, and then using that to get a referral into our target accounts. So again, huge opportunity there. And then last but certainly not least, I want to come back to website re-engagement and looking at that through the lens of now our customers and also then third-party intent data. In the same way that you use it on your prospect side, you can use it on your customers because it can be a defensible play. So if you have customers that are showcasing intent on your products and services, and they're showing intent of in-market signals, that means that they might be shopping around to replace you. So you could have a defensible position in which you incentivize the early renewal. And that could be a trigger-based playbook to retain revenue. In the same vein, if they're back on your website looking at different products and services that might be complementary, huge opportunity to use that data to then expand that account. So again, lots of different triggers that you can use. And then the best thing that you can start to do is layer these things on. So again, we'll talk about this on the next slide, but closed loss plus third-party intent plus website engagement, you put those three together, huge opportunity to actually re-engage in a highly intelligent way from a timing perspective around data you already have. So sorry, I get really on a soapbox about that, but that is, I think, one of the most effective and easiest ways to effectively go to market today and actually convert quick pipeline.
No, I love the passion, Mason, because I'm still in that same camp of, hey, we have all of this information. We have more tools and data and AI and things out there that are available to us. But the people that are winning, the organizations that are winning because their strategy is sound. And the strategy comes from looking at all of this information and understanding how do you piece this together and then how do you get it out the door. But it starts foundationally with understanding how to leverage the data that you've got. No matter your system, you can be as advanced spending money on the ABM platform or as scrappy as you need to be getting all of this to happen, because I've spent my entire career in startups and bootstrap startups, and there's definitely a scrappiness component when you're coming through and building these plays out and making them happen and working with sales and building your audience. And that's where you're understanding how to add the most value, because it's not just knowing when to strike. It's knowing what to say once you get there. It comes very much through that as well. So let's go ahead and dive into that first one, because you're so excited, Mason. We're going to go ahead and jump into lost deals, because, oh, goodness, I'll let you go. Go ahead. Take the stage.
I started to already tease it out, but essentially, if you look at your closed loss reasons by verticals, and then you also marry that with the reason that you lost them, vertical plus closed loss reason, you can then create a highly specific content asset that directly speaks to, hey, you didn't work with us and for these reasons, but here are case studies of other companies that did work with us that got these results that you were trying to accomplish. So getting really specific, not just because generally speaking, when people run a closed loss campaign, what they'll do is they'll just scroll through and then they'll run the same campaign to everybody. And that's better than nothing. But when you cohort and you actually look at closed loss reasons, industry verticals, and also one of my other favorite things to do is look at who had internal turnover and like, why did we lose a deal because of a decision maker making a transition? Is there a way that we can also then potentially re-engage that person that transitioned? Prime example, and it's ironic that it's User Gems, but I was about to buy User Gems at one company and then I left that company, didn't end up buying, and I bought User Gems at my next company because I continued to have that relationship. So again, it's just thinking through what are all of our closed loss reasons. You can then cohort them, speak directly to it, and directly be very specific, be very tactical, be very tangible in why you're reaching back out and how, because time has passed, things have changed. And now it's maybe a better time. Again, that can be things that have happened in your context, but also it'd be great to do some upfront research and figure out what's happened in their context and say, oh, it looks like you got a new CMO, a new CRO. And based on their background, it may look like they're incredible when it comes to account-based marketing programs. Did you guys need any help building that out? Again, that would be something that I would say, but depending on your context, like it might be the CFO, it might be the CEO, it might be the CTO. There's 1,000 different people that you can target. But when you look at things that have happened in their context, especially at the executive level leadership, generally an executive level leadership change results in a strategic change that then you can re-engage around. And lastly, get really creative. I've got two examples that I love. Will Aiken, when he was in a sales role, was really trying to break back into an account after internal turnover. They were like right on the finish line. A new decision maker came in and was hired and just wouldn't take his call. He sent a
and said, seems like you're just a tough nut to crack. And it made her laugh. And then she ended up taking the call and he closed the deal. One of the one campaigns that I used to run, and then I really love this campaign and anybody can steal it, is a popcorn campaign. So you send a tin of popcorn to the person and say, hey, it's been a minute. Just wanted to pop back in to see if things have changed. Very short, very sweet, very concise. But if you can get really creative here, you can very easily stand out in your program. So again, to give context, when I say nuance it based on the accounts and the organizations and the triggers, maybe the starting point is a blanket because the popcorn tin was the blanket, but then the follow-up email. Gifting is only as good as the message. So the gifting is what helps you stand out, and then the message will get read. So if you follow up in an email that's very specific and very tactical after some kind of a gift, huge opportunity to build a playbook around that. So that's the super high level. So again, data, closed loss campaigns, distribution would be largely focused around gifting, outbound email, and potentially social ads. And again, following up on social is a huge opportunity as well. Destination will be ideally looking at specific content assets that overcome their past objections. So it could be case studies, could be product pages, could be honestly even a webinar. Like it just depends on what their objection was. So you wanna make sure you have content that speaks to that. And then from a tracking component, ideally, this is going to be website engagement. I would highly recommend you not look at a form as the tracking component, because if you look at the fact that you have this data already, even in the basic HubSpot instance, if you have the person's contact information and email, you can likely track them if you set up your website appropriately. So you don't even need fringe tools. You use basic in HubSpot. So again, from that perspective, website engagement is a huge tracking component as far as the direction on a closed loss campaign.
No, and I think there's another thing in here as well, Mason, and probably because we're so used to it just being an understood foundation that sometimes you're losing deals, not because your gifting wasn't clever enough or that your messaging wasn't clear enough. It's just, you were talking to the wrong account. This account was never a fit for you in the first place. You completely ignored your ICP and your target audience of who's actually a fit for you. So you lost the deal because you spent time targeting outside of your ideal audience. And that's not to say you would never do that, or you'll always have some inbounds that come through that maybe are an outlier case, but sometimes you just lose deals because they're not the right account in the first time. And that's also another activation play of just realizing, hey, this is a time for us to cut our loss here. And that's fine. You shouldn't be spending extra efforts going after an account that isn't a fit in the first place.
Yeah. So thank you for the clarification. This is not a blanket on closed loss. Like you will go through and cohort. And one of those cohorts might be don't re-engage because they weren't the right fit anyway. In my closed loss bucket, and it's honestly something that you should put in your CRM. If you really do get systematic on your closed loss, you can create a field that is re-engage or don't re-engage. Like, what is the closed loss reason? And the closed loss reason is sometimes not a fit. So then as a result, you wouldn't re-engage those that have a closed loss reason of not a fit.
Absolutely. Because that's the other part of this. It's trigger stacking to know when's the right time, but also when to walk away. It's another part that sometimes we have to relinquish that. But let's go into another one. We've talked about lost deals quite a bit. You've also mentioned a lot about the website intent and what's going on there. And you got to tease this a little bit for me, Mason, but this is such a powerful tool that's available to a lot of organizations. It started out from the very basis. You think of website visitation and you immediately think marketing paid ads. Yes, marketing paid. Of course, yes. That's smarter audiences for paid advertising. You should absolutely be doing this because if anything, it helps to just re-engage that audience, but you got to do that intelligently. In the last however many times you're running this, if it's whether it's monthly or like every couple of weeks, go through and say, okay, this was the audience that came to the site. Where this gets intelligent is when you actually narrow that down to who was actually in your ICP, and then you're re-engaging that audience specifically. So you're spending like a lot, your budget spend is in better places, because then that's one of the elements that you're using this. Then through that activation, depending on the page they visited, you can run different plays there. Because if you've got website intent plus pricing, that makes sense. And then you add that with an MQL score or an account fit score, then you can say, oh, okay, this person visited our website. We're going to add them into this paid campaign bucket, and I'm going to send them to sales because someone at this account is spending a lot of time on our website looking at pricing and they never filled out the form. We should absolutely be engaging with them in some sense. And it may not even be sales. If you've got a different process, that could be a value add marketing nurture that you're adding them into, but it's mainly understanding that the signal is available to you and then putting that person into the right bucket based on the intent that was shown, the activity that's there, and if the account is actually a fit or not. You have to understand all of these components.
I couldn't agree more. I think that first party intent and website engagement is probably one of the most underutilized tools available today. And I think that it's, if you really think through it from a component of trigger stacking, this playbook in and of itself plays into almost every other playbook. So if you're trying to figure out where do I start today, like figuring out how to activate the traffic you're already getting to your website, huge opportunity. I think everybody should be figuring that out.
No, absolutely. Because we've got so many options that are available to us to make this work. And they want my presentation screen, but that's okay. I was trying to get clever on the back end, Mason, and pull up another example for us. So my apologies for that. Let me see if I can get this back up for us. But yeah, going through those examples and what we have here, that's extremely important because it helps us to understand, again, what are the activations there? How do you actually get it out? But then more importantly, it's what do you say at that point? Because I think even teams that are experimenting these activation plays, that's where they can go awry. Technical difficulties, my apologies.
I think we're also about to get into a Q&A section. So if you guys have any questions, go ahead and drop those in the chat and then we can answer those questions for you.
Absolutely. All right. And I think I see we've got one question that's coming through here. My computer is finally coming through. Thank you everyone for bearing with me. My power went out at my home and I had to relocate today, so I'm not in my usual setup.
What was the one question that came through?
That's what I'm trying to get here on my side. Okay, there it is. So here's the question that came in, Mason. I'm a marketer and I don't have an ops person to help me. What are simpler ways that I can build trigger stacking on my own?
Yeah, so admittedly, when I think through the components that go into any activation playbook and the trigger stacking, there's three core components. It's strategy, it's operations, and it's content. So at the end of the day, if you don't have a dedicated ops person, this is not super complicated operations work. It is largely going to be identifying in your trigger, like what is that data point? Based on that data point, then how do we operationalize that? That sounds really fancy and complicated. What that functionally means is in your Salesforce or HubSpot instance, what is the workflow or automation that you're going to use? And the enrollment criteria for your automation is going to be that trigger. And then out of that trigger then dictates, again, if it depends on your distribution channel. So if it's automated outbound emails through a marketing channel, that's a marketing email, that trigger may just trigger an email. It might be enrolling into an active list that then gets synced into your ad platform. It might be you give a task that notifies your sales team to reach out. But from a data perspective and the operations component, it's what's the trigger that then starts that workflow. So again, that's not super, super complex ops work. If you were to look up a YouTube video that is like, how do I build a workflow in XYZ marketing automation platform? You can just follow that step by step. So again, that said, like, there is some ops work and there's no way around that. So if you can work through how do I operationalize this, then you should be good to go. And I'm going to give context. I came up as a content marketer and then like through sheer force of will had to learn ops. I am not an ops person. I've hired an ops person that's way better at it than I am and can be more in the complexities. but like the first versions of the activation playbooks were actually done by myself. And I'm a content marketer by trade. Just happened to get really deep into the ABM stuff. So again, all that to say, content marketers, lean into it, learn how to do some very basic ops work because it will take you much further.
Yeah. And even if it's not the full depth of, oh, I need to become a HubSpot or a Marketo like admin or expert, not necessarily. There's a lot of how-to components and communities that can help answer a lot of those questions if you do have something you come up against that you're really just not sure of. But sometimes it's just understanding the language of what you're trying to get to and being able to communicate that, because you might have another member of your team that perhaps is a bit more marketing ops or just RevOps savvy, and that's just not their title. I've worked with many professionals, even sales professionals, that have a unique understanding for how some of these technologies work. So you can also reach out into your organization as well to see if anyone has ideas or experiences that can help you build this out. Because Mason, you're right. You are going to have to do some light ops work to get trigger stacking to be working for your team.
And in that context, if you need help, we do have process documentation over at Scrap ABM that I'm happy to just send you if you ask for it. So just connect with me on LinkedIn and I'll send you all of our process documentation and we'll walk you through step by step how to set up some of these programs.
Yeah, he's not kidding. He'll just send you the playbook. Again, adding all of that value in there. Okay. So then we've got another question in here for us, Mason. They're asking what types of intent data do you recommend using first?
Yeah, the easy answer is what data you have available, because generally speaking, when you get into some of these different playbooks, looking for new data sources adds a layer of complexity. So as I look at the 4D framework, my goal is to figure out where do I have the most things already done so I can stack the deck in my favor for actually being successful. Prime example, if you have no intent data, that's third-party intent data, you have no second-party partner data through Crossbeam or Reveal, and you don't have a website intent data component set up. For me to say that's the best place to start as a blanket is not accurate, because you have to work through, how do I set this thing up? How do I operationalize it? How do I wait to actually gather lots and lots of data? So like the honest truth and the answer is look at your current contact properties and company properties and deal properties in your CRM and marketing automation platform to understand the current data that's being captured on these individuals. Once you've made that list of the different properties that could be triggered on, work through how do I trigger these things? And again, that's why I provide the list of examples, because for a lot of people, it is closed lost. Everyone has a closed lost campaign, like every single person. As long as you've existed for longer than a month, I can guarantee there are deals that you've not won that you probably should have. So that's generally why I make that statement of like, that's probably the best place to start. But if you have other data sources, look at that. So that's the first piece. What are our data sources? The next piece is, again, where do we have highly successful distribution? Do we have channels that are killing it, reaching our audience? Amazing. Next is, do we have great content? If we don't, probably shouldn't start with that. And the last thing, can we even track it? So look at the 4D framework, not as just a structure component, but also a where do we start component? Because the more you can answer, oh, we've got that, we've got that, we've got that, then it's just easier to actually get going.
No, absolutely. And it's just, it's getting started with what you've got. I love how you put that in a perspective, because that's, again, it's the crawl, walk, run approach. Typically at Sales Intel, our stance is more intent is better. So it's always great to have different signals, but there comes to an operational component of that. You have to be able to leverage that intent correctly. And so it's marrying all of these signals together. And that's, again, trigger stacking. It's how you bring it all together, whether you're targeting your prospects, you're targeting opportunities, or you're really trying to re-engage your customers, which is, again, a huge opportunity. So I love how much that you called that out today, Mason. It's all about, again, getting those signals, understanding what your capabilities are, and then pulling it together and testing. Does this playbook work? Did this trigger stacking work? Did you get the exact results that you were hoping for?
Couldn't have said it better myself.
All right. I think that was our last question that we had. Mason, is there anything else that you'd like to add before we end for today?
No, I think the only thing to round it out is just, again, information without implementation is absolutely useless. So you spent about 35 minutes with us. So if you want to take an hour is precious. We just take an hour and say, what information do we actually have on these people? And that very functionally looks like a quick scan through your contact properties and your company properties and your deal records, and then building out a couple of active lists to be like, whoa, we actually have a lot of closed loss reasons that are known. Great. Or I was working with a client and they had a contact property that was just called scraped competitor data. And I was like, that's an interesting one. Oh yeah, we like pay for this tool and it scrapes the internet and tells us what our target accounts are using when our competitors are in their website. We've never used it. And I was like, that's pretty neat. We should probably figure out how to use that. So there's, again, a surprising amount of data that people have that they aren't operationalizing. So if you just do that quick scan, start building out some active lists, you get to understand the volume of data that you currently have around specific triggers. And once you have that, you can then start to prioritize and say, oh, it makes sense for us to start here. And again, make it really simple. Build a workflow that segments a list, build an outbound sequence. In that sequence, point to content. In that content, make it easy to track. And that tracking might just be a page view. That's it. You can generally get that done in about 20 days if you really focus on it, and then it's launched. So again, this does not have to be overly complex. This is the crawl stage, and it's how you prove a win and build a model.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your experiences with ABM, especially when it's scrappy. And thanks again for everyone that's participated today and been here. We appreciate your time and attention.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.